This is season 5 of Sadie's Divorced and Happy podcast, where I talk about life after divorce with a playful perspective. Are you seeking more adventure? Are you excited to explore your own self-care and sensuality? Do you long for laughter and a cheeky, fun approach to post-divorce dating? Then join me for today's episode to refresh and recharge your life after divorce. All right, friend, picture this. You've survived the emotional whirlwind of divorce, but along the way, you unintentionally shed or gained some pounds. Hello, divorce diet. I've been there. But don't stress, because today we've got Maverick Mav Ouellette, a former Army Ranger turned nutrition coach, ready to help you break free from that diet and indulge instead in straightforward wellness strategies. Mav's practical tips are sure to help you reclaim your health as you navigate your beautiful life post-divorce. I also have a delicious announcement, I know, and of course, a burning question from a fellow listener later in the episode. All right, let's kick off all the flavorful fun with Mav's two spicy facts.
Two spicy facts.
Well, we are finally together to talk about crashing our divorce diet. Mav, it is so good to be face to face with you. How are you?
I'm doing lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
And listener, he has this very charming blue light in the background. So just it's very calming already.
Yeah, it brings out my eyes too.
It does. I like that. But we're going to spice it up for just a minute, because we're going to talk about your two spicy facts.
I asked my my fiance for like what she, you know, I was like, what are some spicy facts about me? And so one, the easy one is I have 19 tattoos. A lot of them are very visible and they're all almost all Marvel themed. I've got like entire Marvel comics on each arm.
Wow.
So, and I read all the comics and obviously follow the movies very closely. So that's one thing.
You are a committed fan, Mav.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know all the lore. Like if you ask them about a character, I can tell them their origin story and everything. So it's like the nerdy part people don't get to see a lot. The other one is my fiance and I went to a nude beach here in Florida.
Are fun. What beach? Yeah. I've been to one, a nude beach in Florida, in Miami. So fun.
Yeah. That's the one we went to. I think it was Holover.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very freeing. I kind of felt like the Blue Lagoon. I know I'm dating myself. That's an old movie with Brooke Shields. You're probably too young
to remember it.
Oh, you've seen it. Okay. Yeah, I felt very, I don't really have her hair per se, but I felt very Brooke Shields, Blue Lagoon.
Laid back though, like surprisingly laid back. Everybody was just super accepting and cool. So it was a good time.
It was a good time. Well, I am excited to learn more a little bit about your work as an emotional support Viking. You know, I live in Minnesota, Mav, which is Viking territory. But the Vikings here are a little more stoic, not really emotionally available, at least not in an overt way. So what does that mean to be in an emotional support Viking?
Well, I mean, I worked with thousands of women and, you know, as a male working with so many women and obviously our marketing tends to attract women in a certain period of their life, you know, usually post-divorce or, you know, some postpartum, you know, emotionally challenging parts of women's lives, obviously I'll never experience firsthand. And so having so many conversations with women and knowing their struggles firsthand as they struggle with whether it's their body or struggling with society's expectations as a single mom or, you know, the everything going on post-divorce, with whether it's, you know, a toxic ex or the alimony or the child support or whatever it is, and you're privy to all these conversations. And so I found myself learning how to be a listener. Working with women has, I say this a lot, working with women has helped me become a better man.
I believe
because
that.
Of how much empathy, compassion I've had to develop for things that I'll never experience. And so, you know, helping women through body transformation, especially during those emotionally challenging aspects of, you know, post-divorce, what have you, I have had to really do a lot of personal development myself along the way. And our growth as a company, as a program has been a direct reflection of that personal growth. So I'm grateful to do what I do. And I'm grateful for all the women who have allowed me to have those vulnerable conversations where I've learned so much that I just had no idea, you know, what women experience and go through when it comes to weight loss and the societal pressure, stigmas, stereotypes that come with that. I mean, it's so much.
It is so much. Well, I am really looking forward to learning more about your emotionally available Viking ways today around the mindset of the divorce diet. Now, I've been through one. And I'll tell you, it was quite an intense experience. as the saying goes, when you get a divorce, you not only lose a spouse, but you lose some pounds too. And initially, it can kind of feel empowering, Mav, because from the outside, you begin to look a lot healthier. For me, I lost almost 30 pounds within 4 months. That's a lot. That is a lot of weight loss in such a short period of time. And so initially, it looked good on me. But after 30 pounds, I wasn't looking really healthy. And yet I couldn't see it because, you know, I saw myself every day. But people who hadn't seen me in months would see me and they'd think I was sick. And so it is such a challenging time when you're going through a divorce and you are so stressed. So how can the listener who's maybe going through a divorce right now or has just been through a divorce get some more support around this divorce diet phenomenon that is really hard to prevent?
Yeah, it's multi-layered, and you bring about a great point, and that is we deal with stressors in different ways. And, you know, any kind of separation where your life is turned upside down, if you have any kind of coping, soothing, numbing mechanism that historically you have, you know, used to soothe stress, soothe overwhelm, soothe pain, a lot of that's going to come out during this time, because despite how volatile or toxic or negative the relationship might have been, the person that you probably leaned on for a lot of emotional support is now gone. And so speaking for myself, having gone through a separation involving, you know, a child, it was very emotionally taxing. You know, everything that I did to numb and soothe came out during that time period. And people do it in different ways. With food, it's either, like you said, not eating to deal with stress, you know, just don't have an appetite, metabolism shuts down, or overeating to soothe or numb the stress, right? And so that's why a lot of what I do is very, very simplified. And it's catered to give people momentum, you know, amongst a lot of turmoil, because it can be so confusing trying to figure out, like, how the hell do I lose weight? How, you know, and you hear 10 different things, you hear 10 different doctors conflicting with each other, you hear, you know, 10 different diets that have 10 different methods. So it's like, what the hell do I do? What is best? What is optimal? And, you know, what is, especially if you're going to spend money on something, you know, a diet or whatever it is, how to know what is going to work. And so what I do is I make things very, 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 very simple and give people a blueprint to no matter what, if shit hits the fan, just do these three or four things and it will lead to weight loss as a byproduct or fat loss or whatever your goal is. And some people don't want to lose weight. Some people want to shape their body, maybe put on some shape. So these things can help regardless of what the goal is. And those four pillars are very simple. It's just average a caloric range, meaning like if you have a calorie goal, just be within a few hundred calories of that goal consistently. So that takes away the pressure of like needing to hit a perfect number and track everything meticulously. Hit a protein goal. So just eat more food with protein in it. Walk a lot. So track your steps and just make sure you're averaging a certain amount. And then strength train, which I think for women has a stigma around it. And so being, you know, encouraging women to get stronger and build the muscle tissue that'll stave off osteoporosis and during, you know, the hormonal changes of perimenopause and menopause. So, and also to add shape to your body, help you burn more calories. So those four things, just doing those four things alone, we kind of empower women to not have to do the D word, which is, you know, diet.
Right.
As you know, I'm very
anti-diet. But what happens when you're going through this divorce diet? I wasn't even trying to diet. I was just trying to get through the day. And so I have curiosity how you would recommend someone who, like, I didn't have the bandwidth to cook meals. I didn't have the bandwidth to go grocery shopping. I mean, how in that type of mindset do you eat well? How do you stay healthy when, you know, I wasn't counting calories?
Yeah. So again, we want to keep it super simple, right? Most people deal with overeating. That would be the majority of people deal with overeating. But if we're just talking like what can we control during this tumultuous time when I really don't have time to track calories or focus on like meal planning or anything like that, if we can just walk and eat protein, those two levers right there are going to make a huge difference. Protein is very satiating, so it keeps you fuller for longer. So if you can just spread that out throughout the day and try to prioritize those high protein meals or snacks, and then also just go on a couple walks a day, it's going to be great for your mental health as well as your physical health, because those steps add up over time. 15% or more of our calories burned every day come from our non-exercise activities. That's a big chunk. So if you can just take those two levers, just take like of those four that I named, do two of them, you can get a lot of momentum there. And I think when people, you know, we almost get into like analysis paralysis when you see all this information and you're like, oh my God, I have to track all my calories. I don't have time to fucking time to do that. I don't
Right.
have time to meal plan. I'm not gonna weigh my fucking food. Are you crazy? Like,
Right,
I have two kids. You know, like, there's no way. So, like, what two things can you do though? Well, let's just start thinking and prioritizing a little more protein, and let's start thinking and prioritizing walking. Those two things, simple, consistently over time, they will equate to results.
So when you talk about protein, I immediately think about nuts. Nuts are my go-to. Almonds, pistachios, walnuts, because they're filling. But what would be some easy, I'm talking easy protein go-tos for the listener who, again, is just in the thick of all of this and doesn't have time to be prepping some chicken per se, not yet at least.
Yeah. And most people think meat, right? Most people hear protein. They're like, oh, but I don't like meat, or I can't eat that much meat. There's so many other sources. There's eggs, there's Greek yogurt. They make those little individual packets of Greek yogurt now, like 25 grams per. So you have the ratio protein, the Oikos 000. So those are two packs that we do for our clients. You have cottage cheese, you have lentils, legumes, quinoa. You've got, I think I already said eggs, bone broth. So there's like what, 10 different sources right there you could use. And then of your meats, try choosing, you know, like some leaner meats, like some ground turkey, some chicken breasts, some leaner red meats. You got fish, shrimp, salmon, tilapia. You know, there's probably 15 sources right there that people can mix and match and use. And before you know it, you're at your goal. And then also supplementing when necessary, right? Like the protein powders, the whey isolate, stuff like that. That's use it as a supplement. If you're low on protein, throw that in. Now you're even closer to your goal.
Do you ever forget to eat?
Do I ever?
Yes.
No way.
No way.
Actually, okay. Let me.
I still do. And especially when I was going through my divorce and even after divorce, because even after divorce, you're still pretty stressed out. There's a lot going on. I would forget to eat. I wouldn't eat all day. And then I'd have a headache and then I'd feel so, you know, distracted. It was a terrible problem. It was hard. It was challenging.
I actually do forget. If I'm really deep in work, if I'm really immersed and I don't want to stop, I'll definitely skip a meal. But I'm so lucky now to have, like, my fiance remember for me. She'll, like, just slide some eggs underneath me while I'm working. Like, here you go. I'm so freaking grateful. But yeah, used to before that, I would definitely I would skip a meal if I was super immersed in work. And then I have to play catch up later on because I'm so behind on my calories for the day.
So when it comes to the problem of skipping meals, because I think sometimes we also buy into this concept of fasting, like fasting is a great way to, quote, do weight loss. What are your thoughts on that?
I hate fasting, honest with you. And, you know, I'm very convicted in my stances on stuff, but I have a lot of content around fasting because it's like, it's probably the number one thing right now. It's like, oh, I want to lose weight. I just won't eat, right? Just starve half the day. Well, if you earlier I said protein was super important. It is. Protein has a high thermic effect of food. So you burn more calories digesting protein than any other macronutrient, carbs or fats, right? So that's one thing. It helps you build muscle, helps you recover. So many benefits for women in particular. Our populace is chronically already under consuming protein. Like hardly anybody gets enough protein. So if you cut your eating window in half, you're gonna have even less chance of hitting that protein goal. So like that's my biggest issue with it is because we're already chronically under consuming protein, let alone if we eat half the day now. And I know there's different windows you can use, like an 18-6 or a 20-4, whatever. It still makes it really hard because protein, like I said, is satiating. It fills you up. So if you're not hitting a protein goal already, good luck hitting it with a small eating window, right? That's my biggest issue. And another issue is it's just like for a lot of people, not, and when I say this, I'm speaking very generally because I work with a gym pop. With general populace, we're just looking for something repeatable, simple, that we can just keep doing in order to do it long enough to get the results we want. And oftentimes what we find with fasting is it's just a band-aid for what is otherwise just a lack of education around how to eat for our goals. And so people, it's like an easy button, just like any other diet. It's like, I want to push this button so I don't have to, you know, do the other hard things. I'll just not eat half the day. But then the cravings kick in for a lot of people. Once you cut your eating window in half, and a lot of people, since you're not tracking calories, you don't know how much you were eating prior. So who knows how many calories you've now cut out by reducing your eating window. So cool, you lose weight because you are eating less, right? But then the cravings kick in and then your weight plateaus and it's like, oh no, what do I do now? I'm already starving half of that. Do I eat 2 hours instead of four? Do I start doing a ton of cardio? Well, now you're doing a ton of cardio on top of only eating 4 hours out of the day. It's just not something that is sustainable for most people long-term, especially women with kids. Like you're already spending a ton of mental energy, cognition on childbearing and child raising. Now you're going to cut off your fuel source. So we have also less nutrients and less fuel coming in the body. So on paper, it sounds super, everybody makes it sound super easy, but long-term, it just doesn't pan out. I mean, 95% of people regain all their weight back from dieting. 95% of people. So I'm just an advocate for doing what is simple, repeatable, and not extreme. And when we look at fasting compared to just a normal eating window, it is extreme. And I'm also very evidence-based. Lastly, is what all I'll say is it's not special. There's no magical benefit of fasting. There's a lot of stuff going around on the internet saying, oh, it's anti-aging, it's anti-inflammatory, all these buzzwords that people cling on to, like raccoons to shiny objects. But the reality is you're just eating less food. That's it. And anytime you eat less food, weight loss is going to happen. And fasting allows a lot of people to do that because they don't have no handle on how much they're eating because they're not tracking calories. So, of course, cutting your eating window in half will result in less calories consumed and then weight loss. So that is my spiel on fasting.
When I was going through my divorce, sometimes I would set a timer and it would remind me to eat. And then I would just eat simple things. I ate a lot of nuts and oranges when I was going through a divorce because they were easy to eat quick. And cottage cheese. I did a lot of that. I did a lot of that.
So your divorce diet was oranges, nuts, and cottage cheese.
Kind of.
I mean, that's protein, carbs, and fat right there. That sounds pretty healthy to me.
So carbs, let's talk a little bit about that because I love carbs. I love bread. I love pasta. And I've noticed when I'm stressed now, unlike divorce, I want to eat carbs. So I wonder why that's changed. What would you say?
Yeah, different cravings. The body craves different things at different time periods, especially again with women. It's a whole extra layer. You have, depending on what phase of life you're in, you're going to have hormonal fluctuations that cause different kinds of cravings. You're going to have different things
Definitely have
happening with your
that
body.
happening. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
Perimenopausal time for me. Not so fun, Mav. Just going to say it.
I will never even pretend to know what that is like. Women get no help in that arena with perimenopause and menopause, especially in the clinical realm. You go and you see a doctor and they prescribe you antidepressants, which isn't even the root cause of what you're feeling most of the time. It's hormonal, right? Your nature, Mother Nature has stripped you of hormones that have given you well-being for a very long time. And that's what's causing a lot of the issues, the brain fog, the difficulties burning fat. And when we correct those hormonal issues, that's when we those hormonal deficiencies, that's when we see menopause become a lot easier. But that being said, as far as craving carbs go, there's a lot of demonization of carbs as well, and it's not founded on any evidence or science. Carbs are really easy to blame, but when it comes down to it, when we look at, again, evidence, data, statistics, carbohydrate consumption's gone down the last 20 years, but obesity continues to rise. And when you take two people, right, and this is just purely, a lot of people will disagree with this, but this is just, again, I'm very evidence-based. And when you compare like two identical women, let's just say, both eating 1800 calories. One of them eats high carb, one of them eats low carb. They're both eating 1800 calories. And let's also say the same amount of protein, because that's the two things that matter, calories and protein. So those things are equal. One's consuming high carb, one's consuming low carb, same amount of calories, same results, exact same results. So carbohydrates, sugar, glycogen, all that stuff doesn't affect results when calories and protein are equated. That's the key part. With any study, with anything that comes out, you want to look for that particular phrase, protein, calories, equated. Because it's really easy to say that when you compare two groups, for example, and one lost more weight on low carb, well, you'll also, if you look further into the data, they also ate lower calories than the other group. It all comes down to total caloric consumption and protein consumption. So, like for instance, we have women of all ages in our program, type 2 diabetic, PCOS, Hashimoto's, hypothyroid, you name it. They all eat high carb. I prefer that approach because, in my opinion, you want to eat as much as you can and also lose weight if your goal is weight loss. And so we keep carbohydrates as high as possible to keep them fueled, keep their thyroid hormone production naturally high as possible. There's a lot of benefits, but yeah, the demonization of carbs is completely unfounded. I mean, carbs are delicious,
They
especially
are
like.
so, I love that you said that word. They are so delicious. I love popcorn too. Yum. Give me some popcorn.
Popcorn's got the fiber as well. That's a
I
good
knew you were
point.
going to say that. I know, it makes me feel better.
Yeah, I love popcorn.
Soteria is named after a goddess, meaning deliverance and protection while transitioning through difficult times. If you're looking for a lighthearted way to support and cheer someone going through a divorce, consider Soteria pins. 10% of the sales of these charming and cheeky enamel pins goes to domesticshelters.org. Visit soteriapins.com. When it comes to starting one's day, I feel like if I can start my day strong, I'm on a good track. It's when I don't start my day strong, then I struggle more. How do you like to start your day just with what you're eating and how you're using your body? Like, what is the ideal way to start your day?
Well, dumbing it all down and knowing that, like, okay, what's important? Protein's important. I'm going to start my day with protein because it's the hardest thing to eat a lot of. So if I start my day with a high protein meal, even if it's a shake or like a Greek yogurt, whatever, I'm already got a head start on my goals. I don't have to cram later. It's going to jumpstart my metabolism. It's going to get me the thing that I need most early and often. That's my philosophy. I think starting with protein, carbohydrates as well, just for purely for energy, for easily assimilated energy. Nothing against fats either. Those are great. You need protein, carbs, and fats. But if we get a head start on protein, then we don't have to cram it later on. So eating a high protein breakfast is one of the best things someone can do. And I know not everyone's a breakfast person. That's fine. Just whatever the first meal happens to be, I would just load it up with as much protein as possible for sure.
I was reading online how caffeine can be problematic with anxiety and not necessarily your friend, even though it's something we consume so much of. Do you have an opinion on caffeine?
Caffeine's a hell of a drug. It's probably the most impactful performance enhancing drug ever created. I think a guy in it was either Indonesia or somewhere had a herd of goats and discovered a berry that had caffeine in it, and his goats were acting crazy when they consumed it. And that was the guy who discovered coffee, because he took those berries, ground it up, started drinking it, and now we have coffee, right? And then coffee is mainly responsible for the Industrial Revolution, because people found they could work harder and longer and through the nights. Like, it's insane the impact that caffeine and coffee has on the body. But can it become detrimental? Well, I think just like any drug, moderation is key. There's also other pathways that caffeine activates. The biggest thing I see with the demographic that we work with women and general populace, is this fear that caffeine raises cortisol and then you're going to spontaneously gain weight or something like that, which is also completely bogus. Acute rises in cortisol have no correlation with weight gain whatsoever or fat storage. But where caffeine can become problematic is where you're depending on it, you're consuming it a lot, and then it's messing with your sleep, and we have the withdrawal. A lot of times you wake up the next day, and Andrew Huberman talks a lot about this. That's a great resource to look at caffeine, dopamine, et cetera. But we find that like a lot of people, you get in this cycle where you're not actually tired the next day. It's just withdrawal from the caffeine. Like it's not actually tired. You're getting symptoms of withdrawal. And so I definitely advocate taking a break from it every now and then, as hard as it is, at least like a 2 week break, and then kind of gradually reintroducing it back in. Cause We kind of live in the more is better mentality, and we start consuming more of it and more of it. It's like, oh, well, one cup was great. Let me try two. I'm going to really be productive. But as far as weight loss is concerned, the biggest thing that you want to look at is your blood sugar, because if you consume coffee completely fasted, nothing else, it can make you a little jittery, because it jump starts the adrenal glands a little bit. And so to balance that out, consuming it with some simple sugars, like some fruit, some carbohydrates, maybe some sodium as well, whatever's been depleted overnight, usually can balance that out to where you don't have that jittery feeling. It's kind of, I like to put several things in my coffee. I like to put some saturated fats, like some dark chocolate, and that slows down the digestion
What?
and makes the
Wait,
caffeine last a little bit
pause.
longer.
What? Coffee
Yeah.
and chocolate? You put chocolate in
Hell
your
yeah.
coffee? Really?
Dude, next coffee you have, put like a
I
little
don't
block
drink
of
coffee.
dark chocolate.
I drink tea sometimes, like an Earl
Oh, you
Grey
don't drink
tea.
coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Okay. Well, for everyone else who's normal, putting dark chocolate. Dark chocolate.
Wow.
It's good. You're missing out. Missing out. It's good stuff.
Chocolate though. So for the listener who drinks coffee, chocolate, please finish.
Dark chocolate.
Dark
Dark.
chocolate, like a little
Yeah, it's got.
square.
Yeah. Just break off a square of whatever I like 85% at least. Make it legit dark chocolate. But yeah, you got some resveratrol in there. You've got iron. You've got magnesium. And then you've got the healthy saturated fats that are going to slow down the absorption of the caffeine and make it last longer. That's a hack. I just gave away a secret.
Wow, I could try that with my London Fog teas.
I don't know how chocolate's going to taste in tea. I'm going to be honest with you, Sadie.
I'm gonna find a way
You
to make
could
it
eat
taste
it.
good.
Why
Eat it
don't you
with
have, you could
just
eat a
eat it a
square of
little bit in the
chocolate.
morning. So you recommend eating dark chocolate in the morning?
Yeah, so a square of it's not going to be that many calories. Don't
I
eat the whole
see.
bar.
Okay, back to eating the whole bar. So I think we need to talk a little bit more for that binge eating, because I know that I can do emotional eating like a lot of people. And I know that I'm not even hungry when I'm doing it. I'm just stressed out and I'm trying to manage my stress, which I know logically isn't the solution, but it's like you can't, it's so hard to stop it. Like, how do you curb that? How do you not even get to that point?
Well,
Is
I
it it's
want
because it's
to be
very
very clear.
discouraging after the fact, you know?
Yeah, look, we've worked with thousands of people who have binge eating as a part of some kind of pattern. I want to be very clear that, I'm not a therapist. I've done a lot of therapy, but I'm not a therapist, and I'm not trying to be an armchair therapist by any means, but I will say that binging is some kind of psychological pattern in most cases. It's usually something that we're doing as a part of something deeper. So reverse engineering can be very helpful. It's like, let's take away the shame. You know, shame's very unproductive. Let's just, you know, fuck the shame. Just I know it's easier said than done, but like afterwards, there's always usually this feeling of guilt or shame. So separating from that, what was the feeling before the feeling? What occurred that made you, you know, led to it? Just go back in time. Usually it's something like I'm overwhelmed by this work that I have to do. I'm stressed because my ex just sent me a text and I always get activated from my ex, whatever it is. Whatever it is, stress, overwhelm, sadness, fear, anger, loneliness, boredom. And then we look at, okay, well, what caused that? Let's deal with that first. And also let's ask ourselves when we started doing this. You know, sometimes it comes down to like the little girl who went into the next room while our parents fought and ate a bunch of sweets, right? Like this started happening usually. This is a young pattern, right? So it's often much more complicated than just someone who, you know, overeats. It's usually some kind of soothing, numbing behavior. And then having a lot of compassion for yourself while we're trying to unwire this behavior, because it's going to take a long fucking time, because it didn't happen overnight. We've been doing it for a long time, very likely. So what we do with clients a lot of times, we just simply look at your calendar, right? And we're like, okay, let's put circles on all the days that you binged and X's on all the days that you did not. And if at the end of the month, if you have more X's this month than you did last month, we're going in a positive direction. Because we get into this pattern, it's like, oh fuck, I binged. I'm not making any progress because I binged again. It's like, no, you binged 4 times this week and you binged 6 times last week. So we're actually trending in the right direction here. That's how you have to look at behavior modification. A lot of people think that you can just turn it off or have a blueprint that's going to make you stop doing this thing that you've literally been doing your entire young and adult life in some way. But the reality is it's like construction on I-95. It takes time. It's going to be there a while. You're going to have some detours. You're going to probably slip a bunch of times, and having compassion for yourself amongst those slips. So, so important. Easier said than done. I've done a lot of behavior modification myself. That's why I kind of have a feel for it, because a lot of it's kind of synonymous. No matter what the behavior is, there's similarities. So that's how we help people through it. That's not the sexy answer, but it's the one that usually hits with most people.
I love that answer. It's very hopeful. I felt hopeful listening to you. It is possible to baby step your way to do things differently. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so hard to love ourselves. You know, it's like for a lot of us, we're very critical and we judge ourselves. We only think about the shit we do wrong and not the 1,000 things we do right.
Exactly.
And it gets us out of gratitude. And we just, you know, that's how things are catered to us, because we are what we can habitually consume, you know? So we consume so much negative shit and it just bleeds into our lives. And that's all we focus on. Oh, why can't I stop binging? I'm such a piece of shit. And that language will never get us out of that behavior. It perpetuates it.
What's so, the language to say instead to yourself?
Some language we'd say instead?
Right.
Oh my gosh. I mean, coming from my own experience, things like, you know what helped me when I was really beating myself up one day? And a mentor of mine, he said, I want you to imagine, my son's name's Denver. He was like, I want you to imagine that Denver just did what you did. How would you speak to him? Would you beat him up? Would you yell at him? Would you call him a piece of shit? And I was like, no, I would. And he was like, what would you tell him? I was like, well, I'd bring him close and I'd say, hey, I love you. I love you no matter what. This is okay. Like this is normal. And I'm going to help you through this. And I understand what you're going through. And just kind of a very nurturing approach. Cause that's kind of what we're doing. We're reparenting ourselves a little bit, you know, as we parent children. And so that made it click for me. I was like, yeah, why would I speak to myself that way? If I wouldn't want to walk in on Denver speaking to himself that way, or if I wouldn't speak to Denver that way, why would I speak to young me that way? When young me is the one that's doing this stuff, I'm a child trying to navigate an adult situation. So that's how I would frame it. It's hard for me to give a blueprint on what to say, but if we can think about how we would speak to our young selves or our children, that kind of can be a guiding light.
That is very emotionally wise and, you know, very healing. And I think going through a divorce, the more that you can make those choices to be kind to yourself and nurturing, not with food with food, yes, but also with your words and how you can soothe yourself in other ways. Absolutely.
Yeah. If there's one thing I've learned from working with women, I've learned a lot. It is that the things that women say to and about themselves, about their body, mind-blowing. I can't believe some of the things I've heard, just the atrocities that I've heard women say to themselves about their own body, just berating themselves. And so helping just people be kinder to themselves and like kind of zoom out and look at these things that have been deemed unsightly. Well, who deemed them unsightly? Society or someone in your past gave you this script that you now run, and it keeps you stuck in this narrative that you are not good enough and you are not worthy. And so much of body transformation, I know this is like we're getting in like the mindset arena of things, but it all plays into, because the mind falls, the falls, I'm sorry, the body follows the mind. And so we talk a lot about this with women because, in my opinion, you can't have a truly impactful body transformation journey without doing that work, without healing, without looking at the ways that we. So, you know, and after divorce, it's very, very key, because there's probably some shit that you're carrying from that relationship, either stories that were given to you by that person, or, you know, behaviors that maybe you exhibited that you weren't proud of that now you can heal and work on, and taking the ownership to do those things so you attract a higher caliber human. You know, by as a byproduct of healing self, you know, it all culminates to bring about this new reality that we want to help women ascend to. And that's what really fulfills me about what I do, because I watched my mother do that in her life. And so every woman in our program, I always say I want them to be another Lynn Willett, someone who came out of a very tumultuous, abusive situation and just became freaking goddess, you know, a Valkyrie of women, you know. Makes me emotional, but yeah, that's why I do what I do.
On your Instagram page, you talk about the revenge body. And I know a lot of people, maybe the listener is someone who desires or maybe had a desire of having a revenge body after divorce. There's that saying is looking good is the best revenge. We've all heard that saying, obviously. And I know for me, when I was, you know, losing 20, 30 pounds and getting all these compliments, I felt powerful. I felt powerful. And I didn't want to lose that. But also at the same time, again, like we've talked about, I wasn't necessarily in a healthy place. So how do you have a quote revenge body with the right mindset, with the right choices around diet, exercise, etc.?
Yeah, I get a lot of criticisms on that term, you know, because at face value, it seems pretty toxic, you know. And there's a lot of butthurt dudes that comment, and they're like, "Well, they've done that during the marriage. They wouldn't need a
Oh,
revenge
I get that
body."
all the time on my page.
Yeah,
Block,
yeah.
delete, block, delete, delete, block. Yeah.
You won't
Anyway.
win that one, Sadie. And as you
I
know,
don't even care. I just don't engage.
yeah. Well, when we break it apart, like, what is the revenge body? It's not revenge on your ex, you know. What we do is we think about it as avenging your former self and the part of you that didn't set boundaries, the part of you that crash dieted, panic dieted just so you'd feel good about yourself in the family photo, the part of you that hid your double chin on every Zoom call, or the part of you that switched out the hangers in the store to a smaller size so the cashier wouldn't think you were buying a bigger size. You know, these parts of you, these parts that deserve love, these parts that are members of the boardroom, so to speak, but they don't get to drive the bus anymore. We're gonna integrate and heal and become our highest self. And so it's more so about avenging the parts where you self-abandoned in order to please someone else, or maybe you accepted behavior and treatment that you don't deserve. You know, avenging that part of you, avenging the part of you that felt like you had to be a certain size to be worthy, which sounds kind of almost ironic for a body transformation program. But we've found over time that when you do encourage love for where you're at and acceptance for your body now, there's much less friction getting to a healthier place, or maybe to a different composition that you want to be, you know. So it's really, when we break it apart like that, it's not so much leaking your ex's nudes or egging his house. It's avenging your former self that you know didn't set those boundaries and is now in a much healthier place.
I'm just soaking that all up because I think women can't hear that enough, Mav. I don't think women can hear that enough.
Yeah, like I said, I'm very grateful to be in the position I'm in, because I had a meeting with my coaching team yesterday, and I told them, I said, there are some things that I can get away with saying And there's just in my for whatever reason, that if you said as women, it would trigger the shit out of our clients. I don't know why that is. There's just some things that I feel very grateful to be privy to in my world. Like I said, so many women have been open and vulnerable with me in these intimate conversations where they described, I basically just asked, describe to me your hell. What was it like when you were at your worst, struggling with whether it was your weight or, you know, post-divorce, all these things, like, and the things I was told, I couldn't believe. And it gave me so much appreciation and compassion and empathy for women and the extra we'll say that women deal with. Like, I always say too, like, if men had to bear children, like if men, like if I had to, I could not handle it. If I had to bear a child, like I would not be able, I would be crying every day. I would go look in the mirror and like instantly be like, oh, like I couldn't handle. Women's bodies are amazing, dude. Yes. The fact that you get zipped up, like if you have a C-section, the fact that they zip you up and then you're expected to care for another human like hours later, dude, like that's insane to me. Like that's, when we break it down, I can't believe it. Like I'm just, women are incredible, man.
I agree. I think one thing that I've loved doing since my divorce is how I just talk to my body. Not that I'm disconnected from my body and I'm not, it's like a third person in my life, but I do like to thank my body for all the things she does for me. And I think that just that mindset, just thinking about my body in a different way, in a powerful way, is very helpful around food and how I take care of myself. So before we say our goodbyes, do you have any final encouragement around mindset just to help this divorce diet experience to maybe not be as intense or overwhelming or maybe more short-lived?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things I could say, but I would say that, you know, you're not in a race. The faster you try to rush a body result, whatever that may be, the more prone you will be to losing that result. It's just like any get-rich-quick scheme. Right. They're usually not really legit. They don't really provide. And again, that's not the sexy answer. But, you know, my interest lies in setting up women for long-term fulfillment, long-term health, long-term happiness. And so we want to make things as repeatable and simple as possible. It's very important that you do, no matter what you pursue, you want to ask yourself two questions. This is like my two fundamental questions before you pursue any diet or method. Do I see myself doing this forever? Would I put my children on this diet? And if the answer to either one of those is no, I would go a different route. So that's how I would evaluate any dietary method you want to choose. You know, do I see myself repeating this over and over and over again? And if you don't, how can we make it more sustainable? How can we find more balance with it?
All right. Well, if the listener is ready to just get on a healthier mindset around food, body, all of that, how can she find you?
Maverick Online Coaching. That'll pop up everything. If you search my name, Maverick Willett, all of that will pop up. But yeah, on Instagram is my biggest platform. So Maverick Online Coaching. And there's a link in my profile. It's got my podcast where I give a ton of free information away. So definitely check that out, because everything I alluded to on this podcast, I go in detail on there. We're up to 40 episodes now. So check that out. And yeah, just if you ever have questions, I do answer my DMs. So shoot me a question. I'll hit you back with a voice note. And, I want to see women win. That's why I do this. So,
well, it has been such a pleasure to meet an emotional support Viking. Thank you so much, Matt, for being part of today's episode.
Thank you, Sadie. It was an honor.
A Stylish Exit by Nicole Richman provides intuitive dating coaching that helps divorced women navigate the online dating pool. Using her unique combination of astrology, self-love, and style, Nicole will teach you how to swipe with intention and confidence. Ready for your glow up? Learn more about Nicole on Instagram at A Stylish Exit or email her, nicole@astylishexit.com. Speaking of dating, I have to give you an update about my dating flavor profile quiz, Vanilla Strawberry Sprinkles. If you haven't taken the quiz yet, I want you to treat yourself, because these three categories of questions were designed to give you like a scoop of insight into your date, you know, and maybe, you know, whip up some creative conversation or some naughty conversation. Plus, when you take the quiz, you will have the opportunity to take a brief survey. The survey is emailed to you a couple of days after you take the quiz. And once you submit the survey, you are entered into a drawing for some divorced and happy merchandise and a copy of our sponsor Nicole Richmond's book, A Stylish Exit. But you have to submit the survey by June 1st if you want to win the merchandise. So treat yourself to the VSS quiz after this episode. You'll find a link to the quiz in my show notes. All right, now it is time for this episode's burning question. And our question comes from Jamie.
Hi, Sadie. It's Jamie from Southern California. My question is, do you feel like the longer you spend alone, the more comfortable you are alone? I've been divorced for 9 years, and I'll tell you, the longer it goes, the less interested I am in meeting someone and having a serious relationship. I'm perfectly fine on my own.
Oh, I just love this juicy question, especially after all the comments that I've received the last couple of weeks from my two-part episode with dating coach Trip Kramer about the shy guy. So Jamie, okay, I just have to start out by saying I'm so glad that you are in such a great place, that you enjoy your company so much, that you're not needing to be in a relationship. I think that's fantastic. Here's the thing for me. I have not yet wanted a, quote, serious relationship since my divorce. I have not been monogamous with anybody since my divorce. Like, the idea of monogamy just doesn't appeal to me. So answering this question for me is a little tricky because I don't want a traditional monogamous relationship. Now, I do want deeper connection and, authentic deeper connection, stimulating conversation, all of that. But a serious relationship. Yeah, no, I don't. And your question, actually, it caused me to do some introspection, which happens from time to time because we live in such a monogamous-minded culture. And sometimes I feel like I should want a monogamous relationship. And I wonder, you know, is it just because I don't want to be too vulnerable? I don't want to, like, make a commitment? Maybe, you know, maybe there's a layer to that. But I really think if I really, really wanted a monogamous relationship, I would work through any of my insecurities or fears or any of that stuff. I really do. All right, I'm going to share a personal story. So I recently had a nice guy come and visit me. He lives from another state. So he came to see me and we had this wonderful day together and we did all these fun things and he was so easy to talk to and he was totally adorable. If there was like a team captain of the nice guys, he'd be the captain. Total catch, great human being. And he's always dated to be monogamous, like most people. And after he left, again, I thought about, do I want, you know, monogamy? Because, you know, he was a great example of someone, if I wanted monogamy, he'd be a great person to have a monogamous relationship with. But I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. I'm owning it. I like dating a couple of different people at the same time. I don't want to just pick one. That's just that's too stressful for me. And life is stressful enough. So all of that to say, Jamie, I don't think I want a serious relationship. And you know, if you don't want one either, good for you. Be happy with your life. Do your thing. If, listener, you want one, good for you. Be happy with your life. Do your thing. But Jamie, I'm going to say that you are going to so love next week's episode guest. You're going to love her because she definitely resonates with your point of view. This is also a clue about next week's episode topic, by the way. I know that was a 2-for-1 right there just for you. Do you know what else is a 2-for-1? My trip to Denver, which is this weekend. I can't believe it. If you live in Denver, I would love for you to join us in the fun. On April 28th, we're doing a brunch. And on the 29th, we're doing a happy hour. Let's build some more divorced and happy community in your city. You'll find all the info for these two events in the show notes, along with all of my other divorced and happy meetup groups. All right. Can you believe we only have 5 more episodes left in season 5? I know. Time goes by quickly when you're having so much spicy fun after divorce, which I always have with you every week. And I look forward to next week's new episode of Sadie's Divorced and Happy Podcast. I'll catch you then.
Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. And be sure to treat yourself by subscribing to the podcast. If today's show gave you a boost, consider giving us some love with a 5-star rating and an enticing review. Interact with Mike and me all season long on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and Pinterest at Sadie's Divorced and Happy. Looking for an affordable and effective way to market your services and products? Consider sponsoring the podcast. Email contact@divorcedandhappy.net to learn more about our sponsorship opportunities. Join us next Wednesday for more delicious life after divorce fun.